Ki Jai. Brihat Madanga Ki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Garanga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 7, text number 9. Yad Vainam Utpatagatam Dvijavakya Vrajra. Yad Vainam Utpatagatam Dvijavakya Vajra. Nishplushta Paurusha Bhagan Niraya Patantam. Nishplushta Paurusha Bhagan Niraya Patantam. Tratvartito jagati putra padam chalebe. Tratvartito jagati putra padam chalebe. Dugda vasuni vasuda sakalani yena. Dugdha vasuni vasuda sakalani yena. Yad vainam utpatagatam dvijavakya vadra. Nishplusta paurusha bhagam niraye patantam. Tratvartito jagati putra padam chalebe. Dugda vasuni vasuda sakalani yena. Madhijis, Vaishnavis. Yat when Vainam unto King Vaina Utpatagatam going astray from the righteous path. Dvija of the Brahmanas, Vakya, words of cursing, Vajra, thunderbolt, Nishplusta, being burnt by, Purusha, great deeds, Bhagam, opulence, Niraye, into hell, Patantam, going down, Tratva, by delivering, Artitaha, so being prayed for, Jagati, on the world, Putrapadam, the position of the sun, Cha, as well as, Lebe, achieved, Dugdaha, exploited, Vasuni, produce, Vashuda, the earth, Sakalani, all kinds of, Yena, by whom? Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Maharaj Vaina went astray from the path of righteousness, and the Brahmanas chastised him by the thunderbolt curse. By this, King Vaina was burnt with his good deeds and opulence and was en route to hell. The Lord, by His causeless mercy, descended as His son by the name of Prithu, delivered the condemned King Vaina from hell, and exploited the earth by drawing all kinds of crops as produce. Purport. According to the system of Vanashram Dharma, the pious and learned Brahmanas were the natural guardians of society. The Brahmanas, by their learned labor of love, would instruct the administrator kings how to rule the country in complete righteousness. And thus, the process would go on as a perfect welfare state. The kings or the Kshatriya administrators would always consult the council of learned Brahmanas. They were never autocratic monarchs. The scriptures like Manu Samhita and the other authorized books of the great sages were guiding principles for ruling the subjects, and there was no need for less intelligent persons to manufacture a code of law in the name of democracy. The less intelligent mass of people have very little knowledge of their own welfare, as a child has very little knowledge of its future well-being. The experienced father guides the innocent child towards the path of progress, and the childlike mass of people needs similar guidance. The standard welfare codes are already there in the Manu Samhita and other Vedic literatures. The learned Brahmanas would advise the king in terms of those standard books of knowledge and with reference to the particular situation of time and place. Such Brahmanas were not paid servants of the king, and therefore they had the strength to dictate to the king on the principles of scriptures. This system continued even up to the time of Maharaj Chandragupta, and the Brahmana Chanyaka was his unpaid prime minister. Maharaj Vaina did not adhere to this principle of ruling, and he disobeyed the learned Brahmanas. The broad-minded Brahmanas were not self-interested, but looked to the interest of complete welfare for all the subjects. They wanted to chastise King Vaina for his misconduct, and so they prayed to the Almighty Lord as well as cursed the king. Long life, obedience, good reputation, righteousness, prospects of being promoted to higher planets, and blessings of great personalities are all vanquished simply by disobedience to a great soul. One should strictly try to follow in the footsteps of great souls. Maharaj Vaina became a king, undoubtedly due to his past deeds of righteousness, But because he willfully neglected the great souls, he was punished by the loss of all the above-mentioned acquisitions. In the Vamana Purana, the history of Maharaj Vena and his degradation are fully described. When Maharaj Prithu heard about the hellish condition of his father, Vena, who was suffering from leprosy in the family of a Malecha, he at once brought the former king to Kurukshetra for his purification and relieved him of all sufferings. Maharaj Prithu, the incarnation of God, descended by the prayer of the Brahmanas to rectify the disorders on earth. He produced all kinds of crops, but at the same time, he performed the duty of a son who delivers his father from hellish conditions. The word putra means one who delivers from hell, called put. That is a worthy son. Om gina tamananda shajananjana shalakaya chakshuram militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupakadamayam dadati swaparantikam. So upon reading this verse in purport, the first thing that struck me was that apparently it seems like Maharaj Vena was not a totally bad guy. In other words, he had some, as Prabhupada states here in the both in the translation and the purport, he had some good deeds. You know, some, he performed some pious activities, which is how he even got into the, you know, came to the position of being the king. I'd overlook that somehow. I just, in my mind, I was thinking he was one of these like a Kamsa or a, something like that. But apparently not. You know, he at one point he was a lot more pious than what he was, you know, at the time when he needed to be removed. So I guess the lesson there is a simple lesson. Pride comes before fall. Be careful, you know. He was obviously at one point very pious and to be elevated to the point of being the, I guess he was the king of the whole world at that point, because Maharaj Prithu, when he took over, he became king of the whole world. So there he was in a very elevated position. He had to perform a lot of pious activities to get there. But somehow or another, he lost it. You know, he kind of got bewildered and he started becoming impious and he's bewildered and just thinking and performing all sorts of adharmic activities, and he had to be removed. He had to be dethroned by actually being killed. So that was one point, that first thing that came to me. Now, the rest of this purport, what Prabhupada really seems to focus on throughout the rest of the purport, is he gives a crystal clear description and explanation of the ideal system of government. Yeah. The ideal system of government is that you have the, you know, in Vanashrama, you have the Brahmins, who are the, like, the intellectual, and they're more than just intelligent, they're pious. You know, Brahmins by nature are intelligent and they're very pious. Actually, in the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, when it's talking about the three modes of material nature, it explains, Prabhupada explains in the purport, that the Brahmins are predominantly influenced by the mode of goodness that's characterized by an increased sense of happiness and an increased sense of wisdom. Those are the two characteristics of Brahmins. They're happy and they're wise. And Prabhupada says the reason for that is because they're pious. They're more or less free from reactions to sinful activities. See? So that's how it works. You know, the more purified you become, the more pious you become, the more you gravitate towards the mode of goodness, and just naturally you become happier and you become wiser. And that was the Brahmins. Okay? So they were at the top. And then you have the Kshatriyas, the administrative rulers. Now, the reason this whole system worked so perfectly was because the Brahmins were not compromised. And Prabhupada, you know, points that out. He gives us the first hint of that in the second sentence. He says, the Brahmins, by their learned labor of love, would instruct the administrative. Means they weren't getting paid. Learned labor of love, yeah. They were doing it as a duty. They saw that as their religious duty to impart knowledge to the Kshatriyas and to others. I think, was it just this morning we heard? Yeah, we were hearing about how the Brahmins would, you know, go around from door to door and they would give advice on health and astrology and like that. You see, so they were educators by nature, and they weren't getting paid. See, so they weren't compromised. See, that was the problem that, anyway, they weren't getting, yeah, they weren't compromised. They knew, oh, I'm just going to say what's I got to say. And you, if you like it, great. And if you don't, it's like, I'm not beholden to you in any way. So it worked. I mean, that's one reason why it worked. And Prabhupada actually mentions later in the purport about Maharaj Chandragupta and Chanakya Pandit and how he was unpaid prime minister. And there was one point that I think he resigned at one point because they were, or he just, I can't remember the exact details, but that was the principle, that the prime minister was, not paid. Now, another point is, and why the Brahmins were confident in executing their service, and why the Kshatriyas respected them, is because, and Prabhupada mentions this in the purport, that they took guidance from authorized scriptures, authorized books of knowledge. In other words, the Brahmins weren't concocting. It wasn't that, well, they're just not paid, but they kind of made up anything they wanted to. No. They were giving instructions in terms of the Shastras. So here you have these very intelligent, and it was self-evident. The Brahmins were, when you met a Brahmin, you'd know it because just the nature. They were peaceful. Samo, Dabo, Tapaso, Chams. They had those qualities of peacefulness, tolerance. What else? Or, truthfulness, cleanliness, etc. They had those qualities, and you could perceive that. And then on top of that, you know that they're not getting any money, under the table or anything like that. And they're not just concocting. They're speaking on the basis of the scriptures, and people had like a little knowledge, so they can, and then they would quote the Sanskrit, and they could explain everything nicely, so the Kshatriyas could appreciate that these guys are like faultless, they're not compromised, they're not on the take, and the knowledge that they're giving us is, the Kshatriyas thinking, well, I'm not really so conversant in this, but I can understand. He's speaking definitely on the basis of the scriptures. He's quoting the scriptures, explaining the scripture. So they felt very confident, comfortable in taking direction from the Brahmanas. And the Brahmanas, they liked to do that. That was what their service was. And they weren't envious. Another point, I kind of touched upon this already, as I mentioned, the nature of somebody and the mode of goodness is their, the qualities, they're wiser and happier. See, so the Brahmins, they weren't envious of the Kshatriyas. They weren't thinking that I'm going to give him this advice and, someday when I get the chance, I'll be in that position. They didn't want the position. The Brahmins didn't want it, but they didn't want to become Kshatriyas. Brahmins are above Kshatriyas. See, but the thing is, now Kshatriyas had a much better standard of living. Kshatriyas would live in palaces, right? They had like tremendous wealth and et cetera, et cetera. But the Brahmins didn't want that, They weren't envious because they had a higher standard of happiness. They were enjoying life more than the Kshatriyas, even though they had very little or no material opulence. One very vivid example of this is in a story that Prabhupada tells about after Kurukshetra, after that war and everything, there was a point at which Maharaj Yudhisthira, he needed wealth. He needed wealth to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, I believe it was. So they sent, so he told his brothers, okay, you got to go out and bring back some wealth. So they didn't know, where do you go to get wealth? So I think it was Arjuna, he approached Krishna, or Krishna approached him anyway. And Krishna told him, okay, look, I'm going to help you out here. You go to such and such place. There was a king, Maharaj Marut, was it? Forget his name. I think it was something like that. Maharaj Marut. Anyway. And he performed this great yajna, and he gave in charity, he gave all these gold utensils to the Brahmins in charity. And Krishna told him what happened. He said, the Brahmanas, they didn't want to offend Maharaj, so they would accept the gold utensils and this and that, And then as soon as they got outside the palace gates and everything, they go, okay, what is this? I don't want to have to carry this all. It's gold, golden utensils. But they just thought, I don't want to be bothered, have to carry this all the way back to where we're going. And so they just left it on the side of the road. They weren't attached. They just, that wasn't where happiness was for them, and wealth and wealth women and followers, not the Brahmins. No, they were above that. So that's the example there. So the Brahmins weren't envious of the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas respected the Brahmins. Everything was being guided by the scriptures. And both of them, both the Brahmins and the Kshatriyas, had that faith that these scriptures are coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You know, I think there's in the Bhagavad Gita, I can't remember, fourth chapter, Brahmakshara Smud Bhavan, it explains that the Vedas are the breathing. You know, they're emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They both had that faith. Right? So they, you know, they felt like this is perfect. You know, the Brahmins felt like completely justified, confident, and good about giving them the directions of the Vedas, because they're thinking, yeah, I'm telling them what's coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Kshatriyas, they're hearing what the Brahmins saying, and they're thinking, yeah, I'll follow this, because this is coming from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so it's perfect. It's a perfect system of government. And Prabhupada, mentions about democracy here someplace in the purport, and, you know, comparing it to very inferior. You know, because he mentions here in the purport that the experienced father guides the innocent child towards the path of progress, and the childlike mass of people needs similar guidance. You know, the average person doesn't know. There's no comparison, you know, between the knowledge of an ordinary citizen and knowledge that's being given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead on how to, you know, conduct your affairs in the human form of life. So this would, it'd be great if we could, something like this could come about again. But anyway. Well, actually, that leads nicely into my next point, which is that right at the end of the purport here, you know, Papa, it describes about how Maharaj Prithu, he delivered his father. You know, he was a good son. And Prabhupada points out in the purport, he says here, but at the same time, he performed the duty of a son who delivers his father from hellish conditions. And once again, I'm sure I've read this purport, I don't know how many times, but I just didn't remember this, you know, that I found it very interesting that Maharaj, King Vena was living in the family of a Chandal Malecha, and he had leprosy. It's pretty far out. And Prithu Maharaj, he performed whatever he had to do, and he delivered him from that hellish condition. So Prabhupada ends the purport. He says, the putra means one who delivers from hell, called put. That is a worthy son. See? So now there's an analogy here. There's something here that we could take from this, because just like Prithu Maharaj, he understood he had a duty. He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's Shaktivesh Avatar, right? He's not Vishnu Tattva. Okay, so but he understood, I have a duty, and he did it, and he delivered his father from the hellish condition. So we, in the same way, we are sons and daughters of Srila Prabhupada. You know, grandsons and grandsons, daughters, grandsons and granddaughters of Srila Prabhupada. And we have a duty. You know, just like Maharaj Prithu, he had a duty and he did that duty and that was glorious. So in the same way, we have a duty as sons, daughters, grandsons and granddaughters of Srila Prabhupada to do something. So what is that? You know, we have to know what it is, right? Well, we heard about it about a week ago when, it was me. I was reading that morning, Chaitanya Charitamrita, and there was we're reading. You know, and just for those of you who don't make it at Mangalarti, we're reading it from the chapter called "The Pastimes of Lord Chaitanya in His Youth." So, at one point in this chapter, it was describing Lord Chaitanya was with his devotees, and he said to Murari Gupta, "He goes, you have satisfied Lord Krishna." He just, you know, said that to Murari Gupta. And then Murari Gupta responded by quoting a verse from the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which goes, Sudama Brahma is speaking, actually, this verse. He says, since I am but a poor, sinful Brahma Bandhu, not brahminically qualified, although born in a Brahmin family, and you, Lord Krishna, are the shelter of the goddess of fortune, it is simply wonderful, my dear Lord Krishna, that you have embraced me with your arms. So that was quoted by Murari Gupta and originally spoken by Sudama Brahman. So in the purport, Prabhupada explains how, you know, Sudama Brahman, he doesn't specifically give the reason why, but he felt himself not as a qualified Brahman, even though he was It does say he was learned. Maybe because he was in such a poverty-stricken condition, he didn't have the facility to do some of the things that a Brahmin was supposed to do. I don't know. Prabhupada doesn't specifically mention. But he thought like that. And then Prabhupada in the purport makes the point that Murari Gupta, he was definitely a Brahma Bandhu. No, he couldn't even consider himself a Brahma Bandhu because he was what caste was he in? Maybe Kayasta? I can't remember. I don't want to start looking through this purport. But he was also not a qualified Brahmana, Murari Gupta. And so then Prabhupada, at the end of the purport, he kind of brings it home, you know, and makes it relevant to our situation. And he explains here, this is the last paragraph of this purport. He says, the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, like Murari Gupta, that's my words, that's not Prabhupada saying that, cannot even call themselves Brahma Bandhus. How about that? You know, what to speak of Brahmins, we can't even call ourselves Brahma Bandhus. You know, we're like Brahma Bandhu Bandhus. The friends, at best, maybe. You know, we're friends of the friends of the... You know, but we can't even consider ourselves Brahma Bandhus. He says, Therefore, our only means for satisfying Krishna is to pursue the injunctions of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who says... Any guesses? Yeah. And Sir remembers the lecture in Mayapur in 1975 or 76. During the festival, Papa gave that lecture. We quoted this verse about 12 times in one lecture. Right? Yade deke tade kaha Krishna upadesh. Amara agyaya guduhana tade edesh. Quote, whomever you meet, instruct him on the teachings of Krishna. In this way, on my order, Lord Chaitanya is taking it on him. He says, don't think, you know, it's me, I'm telling you to do it, don't worry about it. On my order, become a spiritual master. You know, there's also Bhartma Padakshina Guru, that's important. That's the guru that introduces people to Krishna consciousness. On my order, become a spiritual master and deliver the people of the country. End quote. That's Madhulila chapter 7, text 128. Now, Prabhupada says, simply trying to follow the orders of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we speak to the people of the world about Bhagavad Gita as it is. This will make us qualified to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. See? So, to me, it's obvious from that purport that this is what Prabhupada wants. He wants us to do this. He wants us to do what it's being said here. He wants us to, you know, to be out there and instruct people in the Bhagavad Gita. And also, he's saying, if by doing that, we'll be successful in our attempt to satisfy Krishna. And what's the time? 20 past? Okay, just one last comment. So, we can do it. You know, it's not that hard. For instance, at this temple, you know, if you wanted to, say, for instance, go out and preach, what would stop you? You know, what stops somebody from going out and preaching? Well, you could be very shy, you know, like you get very self-conscious, so you find it very hard to approach somebody. That's one thing. And the other thing, maybe you're worried about the money. You know, it's hard to, when you got to ask people for money, it gets a little awkward, you know. But at least on the second one, in this temple, we're very fortunate. We have a lot of people who make donations and support the book distribution. So we're in a position where devotees are actually able to go out there. And I, you know, mentioned this, Savasi very much liked this idea. And we be in the mentality of an ambassador of goodwill. Don't worry about the Lakshmi. You know, in those, I mean, when I'm distributing books, if somebody doesn't want to give a donation, I just go, okay, hey, thank you very much. Here, let me just give you this one. And I always give them something. And that's authorized. And everybody could do that. So it really reduces the awkwardness of the situation. And, you know, that takes its toll on you. And that's one of the reasons maybe why devotees don't want to go out and preach. They're worried about that awkwardness. But when you're able to give somebody something, even if they don't give a donation, it really takes that down a lot, a bunch of notches, you know. And it just, and you can just relax more and just be friendly, you know. Just be friendly. And as far as the philosophy goes, somebody, you know, I know some devotees, I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know how to preach. Or mostly it's just be friendly. The most I ever say about the book, if somebody says, what's it, you know, just I, when I stop personally, I just kind of make some jokes and compliments. And if you can make a joke that's a compliment that's a joke at the same time, that's even better. I'm not going to give examples because I don't want to, I'm not sure if mine are maybe a little bit too far out. But sometimes somebody will ask you, what's it about anyway? And the most I'll do is I'll just open to this picture, which is pretty much, I think, in every book that we distribute, the changing bodies. I say, well, yeah, you know, the book talks about how we're something more than just our bodies, basically. I mean, you see this picture, you're showing how our body changes, but something stays the same, and it continues even after the body's finished. That's kind of as much as I say about I don't get into a whole philosophical thing with anybody. And they're okay with that. You see? So, point is, anybody, you could do it. We could do it. And we have a lot to offer. This is the very last thing, and then I'll stop, and hopefully we can get one or two questions. We have a lot to offer here. We really do. You know, I mean, we're here, so we take it for granted. But if you, just an ordinary person coming, you know, off the street from, and you come onto this block, it's nice. It's organized. It's clean. The people are, yeah, that's Naikatma Babu sees to that, and he does a great job. And, you know, and if they're fortunate enough to come into the temple room, it's clean, it's beautiful, you know. And our part is we should be very welcoming and friendly to the people who come. That's as much as we could do, you know. And as far as the you know, our preaching method, well, I mean, there's so many different ideas. But Prabhupada did say here, I think it was right here in Los Angeles back in 74, 75, he said, print as many books in as many languages as possible and distribute, and this Krishna consciousness movement will automatically spread. You heard that? I mean, right? So to me, that means that as far as Prabhupada was concerned, this method of distributing books should work. It's something that should work in making devotees. So we should, with confidence, just continue what we're doing, distributing the books. And I mean, last year was an amazing year. Last year they did four times the number of Srimad Bhagavatam sets that they did in the two previous years, and four times the number of Bhagavad Gitas, both here in North America and worldwide. So, you know, it's happening. And we should also, all of us should be thinking, how can I do it? You know, you might not be somebody who's just going to hop in a car and go out in a parking lot, but you got to be thinking, how can I participate? How can I contribute. How can I contribute to this effort of preaching Krishna consciousness here as part of a member of the New Dwarka Temple? Okay, so I'll stop there. Thank you. Archita, and then I cut my boom.
Hi, Bhopur. Well, thank you for a very nice class on short notice. Two points of information that I think are important for your class. One was about, you stress many times that Brahmins don't get paid. But Brahmins are also maintained. Not getting paid doesn't mean you're not maintained. Just like you mentioned, the king, they gave them so much gold. Hmm. So Prabhupada said a brahmana means they're authorized to take charity. They could take even $100,000 in the morning, but at the end of the day, they are back to zero because they only take what they need and they give the rest in charity also. But charity is not trained in society nowadays. We're living in a cash economy, so there's absolutely nothing wrong with a brahmana accepting cash. We sometimes give that a taint, like, oh, you're a brahmana, you're accepting money, so you're not a brahmana. No, nobody's trained to give in charity in this society nowadays. And even those who have an inkling, like those who are coming from India, quite often, I mean, I'm not getting on anything in particular, I'm just reporting what I observe. They bring things that they don't want anymore. You know what I'm saying? Like clothing. After you wear it and you don't want it anymore, oh, let me give it to the Hare Krishnas. Let me give it to the temple.
Of course.
That's not real charity. Charity means you give the best, just like the king gave gold. And the householders were trained. When the brahmana comes and gives some advice, you give them you know, some nice produce, you give them new cloth, not things that you don't want. So the society that we're living in now is not trained to give charity, and those who even have some idea of giving charity, not doing it properly. Therefore, when our head pujari does a yagya, a shraddha or something, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the person giving a check. That's just because we're living in a cash economy, and cash is required. Yudhishthira required cash. That's why he sent his brothers out to find money. So even back then, he required money. So there's nothing wrong. Sometimes we have this taint. Oh, you know, he's a Brahmin and he's accepting some money, therefore he's not a Brahmana. That's not true. The Brahmana also has to eat. He has to be maintained. And then the other point was, you mentioned, you seem to be confused about the Rajasuya sacrifice. It didn't take place after the Battle of Kurukshetra. It couldn't have. Because at the Rajasuya sacrifice, Bhishma Dev was there.
Oh, yeah.
And he stood up for Krishna
before,
as being the chief of the assembly. So the Rajasuya sacrifice took place before the Battle of Kurukshetra, not after.
Thank you. Yeah, that's right. Nakatma Prabhu. And then Satchidananda.
Thank you very much, Prabhu, for a very nice class. I just wanted to make one comment. You spoke quite a bit about how important it is for the devotees to go out and preach and distribute Krishna consciousness and the great need of it in society. I was listening to a popular podcast yesterday, and this panel was discussing how just some short years ago there was a survey done about religion, and the research work concluded that some 8%, approximately 8% of the population was atheist, declared, and had no interest in religion whatsoever. And recently they did another survey, and that increased to some 28%.
Wow.
Of the population. And these individuals were talking amongst themselves, and they were trying to take credit. Look at what we've done, what we've accomplished, that people are no longer interested in organized religion, or mainly because it's some cheating idea. So just in thinking about your class and what they had been discussing, brought to mind that there is such a need for truth, for the real understanding, which we have in Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada many, many times discusses how Krishna consciousness is not exactly a religion. But we're giving the scientific knowledge about the self and one's connection with the absolute truth. So it's such an important mission that the members of the Krishna consciousness movement have. Such a great, great mission and responsibility, because the greater society is becoming more and more degraded. There's an absence, there's a void there of instruction, of information. And as a result, people are becoming atheistic, or they're becoming agnostic, and have no interest in any kind of religion, organized as we know it in society, because it's so cheating. This process is not a cheating process. And if we go out and give that to people and show them that there is some truth, there is some reality, they're looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
We have such a great responsibility. So thank you for your class.
Thank you. Thank you for that comment. Such an annoyance. I guess that's all we'd have time for.
Thank you very much. I really like and appreciate that, your class. And there was one little comment that there's actually, you know, in encouraging people to go out and give the message, we probably, a lot of us, we already know that using modern technology is another way, because some people, in spite of what you said and everything, say, yeah, but I can't picture myself being in the parking lot.